Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
And good morning. My name is Dave Kubikin.
And good morning. I'm Kim Hantz.
Hi, Kim. Kim and I are from the Herzog Law Firm. I was going to say we're two of the attorneys, Kim, from the Herzog Law Firm, but we are not.
He just elevated you, Kim. Nice job.
But we are from the Herzog Law Firm, and as you'll see, Kim is far more important than I am at the Herzog Law Firm. We have offices in Albany, Saratoga Springs, Clifton Park, and Kingston, but we do serve up in Glens Falls and the North Country, the Hudson Valley, the lower Hudson Valley, pretty much everywhere in New York. This is a call-in show, and we talk about all things estate planning and Medicaid planning and miscellaneous, I suppose. And we'd love your first call at 518-476-5900. Kim, it's been such a long time since you and I have been on the radio together.
It has been. I mean, like a really long time.
Yeah, what's going on?
Well, you know, living the dream. How about you?
We were just talking before we got on. My voice is still lingering, dealing with the lingering effects of going camping. I don't know what I was thinking, but I know that you're a big camper. But before we get there, we do have a call right off the bat. Kate in Ballston Lake, what's going on, Kate? How are you?
Good, how are you?
What's up?
I just had a quick question. If we have an irrevocable trust, and there are municipal bonds in there that I guess were called in, or I don't know what you call it, and the broker bought new bonds with that money, does that start the five-year clock again?
So the bonds were in the trust, and they're still in
yes.
the trust, correct?
New bonds were purchased, yeah.
With the old bonds?
Yes.
Then the protection continues. So you're using trust assets, the old bonds.
Mm-hmm.
And redeeming
okay.
them and purchasing yep. new assets, whether they were bonds or stocks or real estate or whatever, you're switching trust property with more trust property, a different version mm-hmm. of trust property. So you're good.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much.
Oh, that's a quick one. I like
yeah,
that.
It
Thanks,
is.
Kate.
I appreciate it. Thank
Thanks
you.
Thanks for the call. Wow. Right off the bat, Kim, you're going to be on next week and the week after and the week after, Kim.
I'm sure she's thrilled
okay.
about that. Kim's like, yeah, okay, good luck with that, pal.
Well, we'll get yeah. to a little more into Kate's question in a moment, but Kim, I wish you were on last week, to be honest with you, because one of the things we talked about was protecting camps and vacation properties, and we were talking about camping and how I don't do a lot of it. Believe it or not, Jay yeah. Marie, I think, did the Appalachian Trail or part of it or something like that. But then the yeah. other thing we talked about, Kim, was actually language in your estate planning documents, in your trusts and your wills, dealing with the furry friends you may have at home. And you have a lot of furry friends as well.
I do have a lot of furry friends. And so, it's super important to make sure everybody's taken care of.
So let me ask you, are they all taken care of? I know that your daughter likes horses.
Yes, everybody is taken care of. And it's a process because, you know, not everybody will take care of your animals, A, the way you want them to, B, maybe have the financial ability to take care of them the way you want to. So, you know, our documents have language that certain amount of our, you know, life insurance is designated for our pet care, you know. So, and our trustee is aware of what needs to happen and who goes where, and you know, they're not fun conversations to have, but they're important conversations to have for sure.
That's like literally what we do every day. Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, next time you're on and you're on with Jay Marie, maybe you guys could have a powwow about your different language that you have, because she has chickens and you have all sorts of animals yourself.
I do. And you know, to your point, like just like, I think that's one of the things that we do really, really well. And you and I were talking earlier about, you know, the questions that people ask. And I think one of the things when you mention estate planning, a lot of times people, their ears turn off because they think, oh, I don't have anything, right? I don't really have anything that's worth much. I don't have an estate. And I think really understanding what an estate is and what the planning is. And for some people, it's quite simple, right? It might just be your house. You know, for other people, it might be your house and your five cats, right? Yeah. Or, you know, it might be your house, your camp, your five, you know, like it can go from very small to very large.
Absolutely. And the type of value, Kim, is in the eye of the beholder. So you may be rich and have, you know, millions of dollars, or you may have priceless and, you know, assets. And you know, I when we have young families that come in, I had one this past week. They have one on the way, right? They have one, I think, a 2-year-old, and they have another child on the way. And they say, you know, we don't really have a lot. I said, well, you know, your two most valuable assets are your kids. So I think they're pretty important. Right. Probably need to plan for them. And then, you know, we go into that lovely conversation of talking about how, you know, well, actually, if you pass away, you're actually worth a lot of money because of all your life insurance and the death benefits here and there, and, you know, a death benefit from work, perhaps. And then all of a sudden, we have not only actual money, but we have those kids that need plans put in place for them. Now, your daughter is no longer a kid, right, Kim?
No, she's 18, and there's a lot that comes along with that.
Well, I don't want to go there. That's not what I was getting at.
There's a lot that comes along with that.
But, you know, again, picking on you about the language that you've used before, right, for the last 18 years, you've had a minor. And
right.
Your documents, I am sure, have reflected the fact that if something happened to you and your husband, that there's all sorts of language for who and how your daughter is going to be taken care of. Who's going to take care of her? Who's going to be handling money for her? Who's going to be a guardian for her? So if you don't mind, what kind of, you know, how'd you go about making those plans?
It was one of those things that you sit around and you start thinking like, oh my gosh, what's going to happen if something happens to us? And we, you know, started talking about just having the conversation like who, and different phases. Like we've changed our documents a couple times because it changed from when she was quite small to when she was sort of, you know, elementary, middle age. And then, you know, it's going to change again because as an adult, things have to change because as an 18-year-old, she just can't inherit everything, right? We have these conversations all the time.
That's way too young.
You know, right. So it's really sitting down and first amongst my husband and I just talking about who we felt were the best role models for a young child. You know, it changed once she became, you know, a little bit older.
Did you in your documents, Kim, did you spell Patton and Kabikian correctly for the guardian provision?
Oh, yeah, sure.
That'd be a sitcom waiting to happen, right, Ben?
Yeah, absolutely.
or maybe even a horror story. I don't know. Uh-huh. But I think people forget that, too, that, okay, I've done my documents, they're done. And whether it's with young families or as we get older, you know, a lot of times people come into our office for the first time when they're in their 50s and 60s. And then they just kind of tuck it away and don't really think about as needs change, right? Because as we age, certainly circumstances change and our documents need to reflect that. You know, a lot of times people are still working when they come in. Once you retire, obviously income changes and that sort of thing. And then our health changes too. And so our documents need to start changing to reflect that, whether it's a simple healthcare proxy power of attorney or if it's really looking at the whole estate of things, you know?
Absolutely.
And I think we forget about that. We forget like, okay, yep, I've done that. So to your point, you know, our daughter's 18. She just graduated high school. And now we need to revisit documents because, you know, she this summer is not living with us. So if something happens, I need to have the ability to be able to speak to healthcare providers. And right now, because she's not a minor, it would be more of a challenge for me. So we need to update our estate planning documents so that she has a healthcare proxy and power of attorney now.
I was just going to say, Kim, you need to create documents for her, right? She's never had them before. Something that Jane Marie's got to do herself, because I don't believe her boys have a healthcare proxy power of attorney. And it's so that mom and dad can access records, can talk to medical providers. You know, maybe she doesn't want you seeing her grades in college, so maybe she doesn't want that power of attorney just yet, but I'm kidding. So, Kim, I didn't properly introduce you to our audience, although I think that they know who you are and what you do. But I obviously am an attorney that practices in estate planning and elder law. What do you do?
So the best way to wrap it up in a nice little box is I'm sort of like a professional daughter, if you will. So my professional term is an aging life care manager, or Dave's favorite, the geriatric care manager.
But you don't look that old. Ba-dum-bum. See, so Ben, I don't know if you realize, that's not a new joke. That's an old joke.
Yes, an old joke. Yes, but I get it. Yes.
That's okay. We keep rolling it. So.
That is, come on, geriatric care manager. Anyway, so what your role is incredibly important, and professional daughter, I don't think gets even close to what you do. We have a lot of clients, Ben, who need home care. They need long-term care, and they don't feel like going to the nursing home. I don't know who does. And
who would want to?
Yeah.
If you don't absolutely have to.
And their kids don't want to send them to one. And there's a whole world of options for how to get care outside of a nursing home, or even in a nursing home, but really outside. And it is an understatement to say that people just don't realize how many options they have, or that there are actually options. Sorry to cut you off there, Kim. So, Kim, we talked right before you got on, and one of my questions was, man, if you had a button that was just a recording of the same old thing you say all the time to save you 5 minutes of educating someone, what are the topics that you wish you just had that button for? What are the things that people don't realize that you're explaining the most?
I mean, I think one of the biggest things is planning ahead. Just in general, because in this day and age, resources are very short and very sparse. So understanding what you may have access to and the ability to access the services that are available, because, you know, we have tremendous wait lists even for nursing homes, right? Like, it's a tough time right now. So one of my things is planning ahead. The other thing is really understanding sort of the different categories of services that are there. A lot of times people present to us saying, my doctor says my mom needs to go to a nursing home, right? And we sort of sit back and go, okay, you know, tell us about what's going on. And sure enough, I would say probably 8 times out of 10, really, nursing home is not appropriate at all.
Well, right, Kim, and what they say is maybe not that your loved one needs a nursing home. They say something like, oh, she can't go home. And maybe they're right that she can't go home and live by herself like she always did with, you know, two sets of stairs and the whole thing. But that doctor or that, that social worker who's saying something like that, that discharge planner who's concerned about whether or not the discharge is going to be safe, they are not you, and they don't know all the resources in the community. They don't know the family situation. They don't know that actually home care is beyond just the word home, and it encompasses a whole larger swath of services and potential locations and all that stuff. And I get this a lot on the estate planning side, where, you know, someone talks to their neighbor and they come in, they say, yeah, I'm here to do a trust. I say, why do you want to do a trust? Well, my neighbor told me I got to do a trust. Or they say, well, it's too late to qualify for Medicaid. I say, why is that? Well, because someone told me I made too much. And, you know, when we switch this and I talk about my button that I'd press, it's going to get into those topics. But whenever we talk to a client, myself, Jane Marie, Harry, and we're talking about possibly a nursing home placement, we always, each and every one of us, will first kick the tires on, well, why not home? and why not, you know, an independent senior living, or why not an assisted living, or why not an ALP? And I don't think that the public in general understands that all of those things that I just mentioned can be part of the community Medicaid, the home care Medicaid plan. Even though, you know, you get so focused on the word home, and no, the home's too big. Yeah, okay, let's get creative then, and let's figure out another living arrangement. And, you know, I was hoping that we could talk about all the different success stories that you've had, or the different versions of what success is. Because I could tell you just firsthand from my family, and, you know, my parents are in town. They're probably listening right now. Hold on, Garth, one moment here. My parents are in town. They're listening right now. Although I don't own a radio. And Ben, do you own a radio? No. Yeah, he's got a...
Yes, quite a few.
You do?
Yeah.
And you, I mean, not in the car, like a standalone radio.
Yeah. Yeah.
Huh.
Okay. Why does that seem odd?
I don't know. I don't own a radio.
We have them all over the house.
Kim, do you own a radio? Camping Kim?
I do own. I play it every day for my dogs when I leave home.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. Well, maybe I'm out of it then.
You should try it more often.
All right. Well, I'll
buy you one if you need it. I mean, it's, you know.
I'll get back to my point about my parents and what's going on there for a moment, but let's go to Garth in Greenwich. Hey, Garth, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
What's up?
Well, I just had a question about legislation. I was wondering if you could explain how the so-called Secure Act has changed stretching an IRA given to a non-spouse beneficiary. And I'll actually just leave you with that and hang up and listen to your answer.
Well, hey, Garth, so let me ask you, do you mind if I tackle that in the second half hour?
No, that's not a problem at all.
Thank you, Garth. You're the best.
Okay. All right. Thanks. Bye.
Bye. Garth is always on top of it, Kim. Garth is back.
Yes, he is.
And his questions are always really provocative and great. So, Kim, you know this very well. We have a family member who right now was approved for 24/7 care through the community Medicaid program. And the circumstances as to why it was needed is unfortunate, of course, and I won't get into too much. But suffice it to say that if we were not able to get 24/7 care in an environment where caregivers are so hard to find, we may have had to have made a really tough decision about a nursing home.
Right.
And what the family didn't realize, what I didn't fully realize, what my parents didn't fully realize, and that's what they were asking me about today, is the idea that right now, this family member has 24/7 care in the form of a live-in aide. Do you mind explaining how that works, Kim?
Yes, it is complicated, and it's you know, particular cases. But in general, we can utilize a live-in as somebody who's there all the time. We need to have good family support because obviously an individual can't work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. But that live-in is there, works a regular weekly schedule, lives in the house, and is available to be with the family. We also will implement other supports with the live-in, so maybe a few days of adult daycare, because again, a live-in is not technically a live-in, works 13 hours a day, right? So they need 8 hours of rest, 5 hours uninterrupted. So a lot of times when we're exploring the live-in situation, we want to make sure it's the right circumstance. What's so great about a live-in and having a live-in is we're not worried about hourly staff or shift staff showing up. Because so often, particularly with our 24-hour cases, somebody has to be there, right? And if you've got a 12-hour shift where a caregiver, an aide, doesn't show up, or they have car trouble, or they have a sick family member,
or it snows outside.
Right. So then that person doesn't show up. What happens if we have an individual that's left alone without care? You know, it can cause a myriad of problems, of course. So really having that live-in is a way that we've been really successful in being able to provide the needed services for an individual.
And I'm sorry, Kim, not to cut you off. In this instance, right, we have a family member in the house, and they're okay with the live-in, and the live-in's able to fill in all the blanks, how the family chooses to use the live-in and how those hours are made up and so on, you know, is to be determined. But for a lot of people, finding the caregiver itself is the hardest piece of the puzzle. So having a person who's willing to be a live-in and, you know, entities out there who basically staff and connect people willing to be a live-in with people who may need a live-in, that can really work. There's dozens of fact patterns where that's not the right fit, where there's no way that's going to possibly work, where it's a one-bedroom apartment, right? There's all sorts of ways it doesn't work, but sometimes that can work. Segue real quick. You mentioned, you know, maybe sometimes we'll take advantage of the daycare program to fill in blanks when the live-in can't. So, by the way, everybody, there's a day program out there, and it's back because COVID's kind of retreated a little bit. Kim, do you mind talking about this day program? What's a day program?
So a day program is, it can be a social or medical model. And, you know, in general, all day programs are open from basically like 7:30, 8 o'clock in the morning to about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. It's a great place for individuals to go, either with medical problems or memory issues. They're staffed. They get meals, snacks, you know, assistance with toileting, in a medical model. They can get actual personal care, whether it's incontinence care, a shower. So for a lot of our families, individuals that we work with that may not have a bathroom on the first floor, right? So often we're working with individuals who live in an older home and maybe the only accessible bathroom is upstairs. Okay, well, we can get our personal care at an adult day program. And they can get an actual shower there. They can get physical therapy, occupational therapy, at a medical model. So there are lots of ways, again, to be creative, to be able to provide the support that somebody may need and be able to keep them at home with these different things. But the day program is also nice for folks who may not, you know, you've got a married couple and the caregiver needs time alone. Right? Or in your family circumstance, there's a family member living with the individual, works remotely. So it can be a distraction to have the one that you're caring for there and a staff person all the time. So by utilizing the day program, it gives the caregiver a break where they can actually be in the home by themselves doing whatever it is that they need or want to do, whether it's working, you know, whether it's just being in your home and enjoying your home and not worried about entertaining a staff person. Because so often that's the big challenge sometimes with home care, particularly when we say to folks that they really do require 24-hour, it can be intrusive having somebody in your home, you know, every hour of the day and night. So looking for ways to be able to provide even a primary caregiver with some true respite. The day programs, I love, and one of the things that we really talk about with day programs is they provide a social outlet, simulation. A lot of times, if we send an individual, particularly someone that may have some memory loss whose days and nights get mixed up, if they're engaged in a day program during the day, by the time they get home, they're tired and wiped out. So a lot of times we're able to switch that sleep schedule back to normal because they're up and awake and engaged during the day. So by the time they get home, have dinner, you know, they're exhausted and they sleep much better through the night. Whereas maybe they were up at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, confused about what time it was and is it time to get up and shower and do all these things. And so then you have a caregiver who's up all hours of the night as well. And, you know, we have a lot of circumstances where it's the healthy primary caregiver that ends up having a health crisis because of the stress of caregiving.
I was just going to say that, Kim. And that's kind of what led to our live-in situation was the previous primary caregiver, you know, kind of breaking down, body breaking down and the whole thing. You know, none of this is ideal. Right? We're never talking about, none of this sounds very great. You know, someone's going to live in my house with me, or I'm going to, you know, have to go on a day program somewhere, or I'm going to have random people coming in my house in shifts. But none of it's great.
Yeah, but it's still better than going to a nursing home.
Bingo.
No matter what you do, you're still familiar with your house. You're familiar with your surroundings.
Yep.
The person that's there, I mean, unless they have Alzheimer's and can't remember, but other than that, I mean, they're in their house. This is the comfortable place. That's their spot.
Yeah, they walk in the backyard or they're sitting, you know, and you're not inside their brain. You don't know what is triggering memories and where they're most comfortable. But I'll go on out on a limb and say that probably the nursing home is not the most comfortable environment to be in.
Yeah, I would think that would be like one of the last things you would choose.
Absolutely.
You're on everyone else's schedule when institutions have their place, and I don't want to like bash nursing homes or assisted or anything like that. They have their place and they're really terrific for some folks. You know, like I just heard Ben say, like somebody who may have Alzheimer's and doesn't even remember where they are. I mean, I can tell you, you know, long-term memory goes first or goes last with somebody that has Alzheimer's dementia. And having that muscle memory of a home that you've been in for 45, 50 years is so important and really plays an important piece for a lot of folks to be able to maintain some sense of comfortability, right? You move them to a facility that they're not familiar with. And, you know, I don't know about you guys. You go in the kitchen and you automatically know what drawer to open to get the forks out.
Sometimes.
Right. Sometimes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, give me two guesses. It's funny. With our light switches, Isabel always will, you know, I hear one switch on, off, next switch on, off, and then she gets the right one usually.
Oh, yeah. 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 Uh-huh.
But generally speaking, right? But you move to a facility and everything is new. And when you have a memory impairment like Alzheimer's, you don't have the ability in most cases to learn new things. Right, because the short-term memory is affected the most, so you never have the opportunity for that to imprint and to learn new behaviors, new scenarios, new circumstances. So being able to remain in a home that you're familiar and comfortable with, we have a 94-year-old right now who lives, you know, sort of on the not the top of a mountain, but the top of a hill in Gansburg. Her home overlooks the Green Mountains and to the north, the Adirondacks. And to see her, and that's all she's, I mean, she just loves to sit in her living room with her picture window and watch the mountains. And that was so important for her. We have another client that we worked with that lived in Plattsburgh whose home overlooked the Champlain, you know, Lake Champlain. And she wanted to die looking at the lake. That was her one wish.
Wow.
And, you know, being able to facilitate those wishes are so important. And, you know, Dave, to kind of go back to the beginning of the show when you were saying, you know, things that I repeat, you know, to people all the time, telling people to have sort of an aging plan is so important because we are all going to die. Like none of us, you know, nobody gets out alive, right?
Mm-hmm.
And really thinking about what you, as you age, what do you want that to look like? Because so often the folks that we work with and deal with and the circumstances that they're faced with is not how they want things to go, right?
Exactly.
So I think just really being honest and having conversations is so important.
All right, we're going to take our break right here. We'll be back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate Medicaid Planning Hour coming up right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs, Executive Woods in Clifton Park, and 130 North Front Street in Kingston, our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie, or Harry, please call us during normal business hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581. Our Saratoga Springs office, 518-581-8131. Our Clifton Park office at 518-952-4010. And our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Plan Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
And welcome, we're back. My name is Dave Kabikin.
And I'm Kim Hance.
Kim and I are from the Herzog Law Firm, and we've spent the first half hour of the show talking about long-term care in the form of home care and what that means and what that doesn't mean, a bunch of different considerations. And we're lucky to have Kim with us because she is an absolute expert in the field. I've had a couple calls, and I owe Garth an explanation about the SECURE Act. It's coming, Garth. You could be our next caller at 518-476-5900, but we don't have to wait long because we have Diana in Albany. Good morning. How are you?
Okay. Do you talk about reverse mortgages?
A little bit. What do you want to talk about?
Well, I have a friend who's interested in one, and I'm not too keen on it, and I wondered if they're worth the trouble.
Well, so the way they work in general, and we're not, you know, selling reverse mortgages or dealing. I mean, I see the commercials, right? Like, I have.
Why don't you just give your stock answer? It depends.
No, it doesn't depend. Okay. So she's doing it for a reason, right? And the idea that when people do reverse mortgages, they like to have basically more money, more income, more like an annuity. So they're getting they're getting money every month. So,
getting the money.
They don't have to
pay a rent.
Correct. They are getting money, and in return for getting money during their lives every month, they're giving up future interests in their property in the form of this mortgage.
Okay? I see.
So the way other mortgages work is that you get, you know, you're borrowing money and you're paying back the money that you're borrowing. Here it's kind of the reverse mortgage. So you're getting money. So is it a good idea? Well, it depends on what you need the money for and whether you're going to, you know, use it for the right things, I suppose. Is it better or worse than getting a home equity line of credit on your home and using money that way? So it's really not for me to say it's a great idea or a bad idea. I could say, you know, they sell them or advertise them on TV, and I'm always a little weary of things advertised on TV. However, they serve a purpose, and they, you know, it's not like they're illegal or anything like that. So I don't know if it's a good idea or a bad idea, but that's kind of how they work.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Kim, let's get back to the home care before I do get to Garth's question. One of the things that you were mentioning, right, you were talking about day programs. We were talking about live-ins. Sometimes none of those are applicable to the fact pattern. And one of the things that I tell clients all the time is that money solves a lot of issues. And what I mean by that is that when clients have lots of resources, which we can protect with a trust, and we could protect immediately with a trust when it comes to home care, or when people have lots of income, which we could also protect while we're doing home care through something called a pool trust, when we have either of those situations, we're in a much better fact pattern because we'll always have the ability to not only qualify for Medicaid, which we can. I don't care how much money you have. I don't care how much money you make. I can get you qualified for home care. Okay? There's no look back period currently. However, when we do have additional monies, when we do have that excess income, we can always use that money to pay for additional care, to pay for more things to make home or an apartment or wherever you're going to be living a little more doable. And when we do have, you know, when you do have a client, Kim, who's got, you know, a decent amount of income, How does that change your plan? I mean, I assume obviously you're still going to try to get as many hours as Medicaid can cover for that individual. But when you know there's a decent amount of additional income we can use to around the edges of the plan, how does that affect you, what you do?
Well, it certainly makes the plan a little more cushy, right? So if we've got somebody, I mean, even utilizing a live-in, but maybe that person really is up and down 24 hours a day, and the live-in really technically, again, only works 13 hours a day. So it allows us the ability to maybe hire additional staff to sort of pad. It also, you know, using assistive technology is becoming, you know, a huge factor in the plans that we create because, you know, maybe we put cameras in. Maybe we use some kind of telehealth monitoring. Maybe it just makes things a little more accessible. Maybe we can put a stair lift in the home. Maybe there are other, you know, types of things that we can look at to make the home more accessible for an individual and more comfortable. So it certainly allows for some of those, some of that fluff, if you will. But being able to utilize, to your point, the pooled income trust to do that, it allows us the ability to do all that. You know, one of my favorite things, as I know one of yours, is for to hear somebody say, oh, I make too much money.
No such thing.
There's never... I mean, there are some scenarios, right, where we've sat with families and we've really looked at it from a pragmatic standpoint. And maybe you're right. Maybe the income is too high because they don't have, you know, as many expenses every month
outweigh. Let me rephrase. It's not too high to qualify. It may be too high to make it worth it. And that's all right. I mean, look, Bill Gates is not calling us for community Medicaid, right?
Correct.
Although we can get him qualified. There's a difference between those two statements. So we can get you qualified, and then let's see if it's worthwhile. Let's see if this spend down makes sense. You know, can we have a client who is actually going to be, is in a nursing home right now. It's husband, it's dad. We're getting him qualified for Medicaid. His wife is still around, still doing okay. And so we know he's going to qualify because we can move assets to spouse and get him qualified. And he's got a really large IRA, really large IRA, and it's in his name. And the way Medicaid works is that they look at that IRA and they say, well, we're not going to count that as a resource. It's not going to count against the 16 grand you're allowed to have in resources. But they do look at it as income, and they want him to draw down on that retirement, not the minimum distribution that you take when you're 72 or older. It's coming, Garth. Okay. But they want you to maximize the distribution you're taking and treat that as income. So his spend down for this nursing home application was going to be almost five figures a month because of his age and the balance of his IRA. The family decided, they just decided they're going to liquidate the thing. They're going to liquidate the whole thing. Now our paralegal Mike Luizzi and I, we were thinking they'll liquidate 100, 200 grand just to lower the income. No, they're doing the whole thing, and that retirement will be treated as income, and there'll be a big tax hit. But they're going to immediately move that money, Ben and Kim. They're going to move that money to spouse, and that'll continue to qualify. His income contribution will be very low compared to what it was going to be. Oh, wait a minute. What about the five-year look-back period? Well, everything moved to spouse. Exemptions include transfers between spouses, so there's no five-year look-back period. Wife is going to do something called a spousal refusal, and there you go. So in that instance, there was a lot of income, and the family decided, look, Dad's health is pretty good, believe it or not. His ticker is doing all right. His lungs are doing all right. He's just, you know, I say this as nicely as possible. His brain is kind of mush, okay? Mm-hmm. He needs a nursing home. They think it's going to be for a long period of time. So they did this analysis, and they came up with that conclusion. So even in that instance, right, you can never have too much. It may not be worth it if it was Dad was just a single individual, Ben, and there was no spouse. Well, you know, maybe they're just saying we're going to private pay this facility for a period of time. Or they're going to say we have so much money, Kim, that we're going to make home care work no matter what because we could throw money at it. And no matter how much money we throw at it, it'll be better than the cost or the experience at the nursing home. So it, when we say it depends, you know, Kim, Ben always gives me a bunch of nonsense about the word depends.
Always.
Because it, but.
It does depend.
It all.
It always depends.
I wouldn't have imagined that I'm going to have a client liquidate $500,000 IRA, but they're doing it, and it makes sense to them. It kind of, you know, it, we'll see if it's a good idea depending on how long Dad lives, but it all depends.
So the shorter he lives, the better it is, or the longer he lives, the better it is.
So
I mean, you want him to live as long as possible, but which is the better scenario? So
this is a good time to address Garth's question.
Okay.
So when you have an IRA. And you take distributions on that IRA, you are going to be taxed. It's a taxable distribution. It's income. Unless it's a Roth IRA, if it's a simple IRA, your distributions from your retirement are taxable. Okay? They're taxable to the person receiving the money. So the idea is, and it works out, right? When I'm getting my distributions later in life, I'm not otherwise working. I'm in a lower tax bracket. So I'm getting money and I'm not getting taxed at a high amount. The IRA is always going to be taxed eventually.
At some point. Right.
Right. So maybe the spouse receives the IRA when dad dies, when husband dies. Or maybe the kids are the beneficiaries of the IRA when mom and dad pass. Now the kids are going to have to take distributions on that IRA. They will be taxed on those distributions, but those kids are kids. They're working. They're younger. So their tax bracket could be higher. So the family recognized we will always be paying taxes. It will happen
at some point, right?
Do we take a huge hit with a higher percentage in 2022? Do we split it between 2022 and 2023 and 2024? That's for accountants and financial advisors and the family to figure out. Where Garth's question came in was he said, well, wait a minute. There's this thing called the Secure Act a bunch of years ago. What that did was it made your required minimum distribution. If you have an IRA, you can't just sit on it. You got to take distributions eventually. I was thinking about Happy Days when I heard sit on it.
Yeah, right.
Sit on it, Potsy.
Yep.
So you're going to have to start to take it. It used to be at 70 and a half.
Right. Now it's later, right? 72?
72.
Okay.
So you have to start taking distributions. If you pass and you leave your IRA to Ben, you just received, you inherited an IRA.
Mm-hmm.
You have the option of spreading that IRA distribution that you're going to be required to take. Now it's up to 10 years. It used to be during your lifetime you could take this distribution. And that was amazing because if you left your IRA to a 20-year-old, they'd be taking, you know, 0.3% every year of that amount. It would grow far more than the withdrawals.
You'd be taking out, right.
They switched it to a 10-year max stretch, which is Garth's question or towards Garth's question.
So every year 10%. You're taking 10%.
You could,
right.
You could also liquidate it all in one shot. A bunch of different.
Depends on the circumstances.
So, and you figure out what you want to do.
Right.
So this family said, look, we're gonna pay the piper eventually. Mom and dad are both going to die eventually. And you know what? We'll just have the tax hit now.
We'll just pay it now.
We'll make sure that we have as little of a contribution to Medicaid. And that's that. So it worked for that family. I got Garth's question in. This is amazing.
Yeah, we still have 13 minutes left.
There you go.
So that's pretty good.
Well, so, Kim, we have webinars coming up. I hate to say that we're already midsummer, but we're midsummer. And the week of July 19th, we do have a couple webinars. We don't have a full week anymore, Ben. It's a webinar series, I guess, a couple days.
Yeah. Just don't interrupt the track, that's all. Do it like Monday, Tuesday, when they're dark.
I don't think the track will have started yet.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Tuesday,
yeah,
July 19th.
It starts on Thursday, the 14th.
Oh,
so
okay.
Well, we're already a couple days in.
Well, at 2 p.m., you know, you could watch on TV.
I get the first two races in and then watch the webinar.
Yeah, watch the webinar.
I'm in.
Tuesday, July 19th at 2 p.m., this topic we've been talking about all morning, aging in place, incredibly important. The details in it, the options, both on the estate planning and how do I get qualified side, to what does it mean to get qualified side. 2 p.m. aging in place on Tuesday, July 19th. Wednesday, July 20th, 2 p.m. wills versus trusts, my favorite. On Thursday, July 21st, it's Ben's favorite.
What do you do when a loved one dies?
Bingo, bango. You got it. All really good webinars, all very educational, all actually already available on demand. So if you wanted to go to our website, www.herzoglaw.com, you can watch an older webinar on these topics. If you want to be live, you could register for our webinars right then and there on our website, and we'll see you in a couple weeks. Kim, I'm already starting with consults, scheduling document signings in the month of September. Can you believe that? Mm.
Well, that's great, though. It means that maybe people are listening and want to come in and take care of things.
Great. It means the summer's going to end.
What? Well,
that's usually, that's my husband's biggest complaint about living here is, we've got 8 weeks of summer.
Yeah, but the fall is so nice.
I mean, September is the best.
It really is. September, October is best.
No, those are my favorite as well, you know. And actually last year wasn't bad, right? Like it wasn't, we didn't have a horrific winter.
And it's been a good summer. The weather's been
summer's
unbelievable.
Summer's been great. The weekends have been awesome.
I feel like
so
it
far.
Rained a lot last year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was very humid and very hot in spots. And, you know, we've had some heat, but really not that bad.
So Kim, you know, I have a button that I'd love to press every time that people ask me or make a face when I say, or they ask me, is this trust irrevocable? And then I got to go
it
through
depends.
My whole spiel. No, it's... So what we're talking about is the Medicaid Asset Protection Trust. So, Kim, is that Medicaid Asset Protection Trust? It's an irrevocable trust, right?
Correct.
Okay, and that means I don't control anything, and I can't use my money, and I can't change anything, and I just lost all my money, right?
What?
Incorrect.
Yeah, very good. You both pass.
I was going to say, I'm looking at you like you've got three heads. I'm thinking, even I know the answer to this question.
So, most people out there, and I apologize. Well, you know what, Kim? You have not been on with me for such a long time that there's new analogies I have for how irrevocable and revocable work. You haven't even heard them.
Let's hear them.
Yeah, let me try it on you. Okay. So, it's the difference between revocable and irrevocable, okay? Because people think revocable means you control things, you can undo things, and you could change things. It happens to mean all those things. It does. Revocable means that. Then people think irrevocable means you can't do any of those things. That is not what irrevocable means. Irrevocable does not have anything to do with amending your trust and changing your beneficiaries or your trustees. It has nothing to do with you controlling things. It has nothing to do with the ability to remove money from the trust in general. It specifically has to do with removing money from the trust and putting it in your pocket by yourself. The act of doing something by yourself. Revocable means you can do it by yourself as the creator of the trust. Irrevocable means you cannot do it by yourself. It does not mean it can't be done. Okay, that's my setup here. So, Kim, let me ask you, do you have a toaster in the house?
I do.
Is your toaster movable?
It is.
You can move the toaster.
I can.
You can move it by yourself.
All by myself.
The toaster is movable. We all agree. Ben, do you agree?
I agree.
Okay. How about your oven? Is it movable?
It is.
Tell me about it. How can you get that thing into the back of a van?
I need some help.
Oh, yeah? Tell me more. What kind of help? Who do you need to help you? Anyone in the world that you want. Correct. So a lot of people, when I ask this question to clients or at webinars, they say, this is their answer to, how about your oven? Can you move it? They say, no. Well, actually, and I say, all right, let's explore that. And they say, well, I can't do it by myself.
Bingo.
Your oven is movable. Your irrevocable trust, I'm not going to say it's revocable because it's a legal term. It's undoable. We can undo it. You can undo it. You can make it. You can take money out of it, right? It's just we cannot do it by ourselves. We do it with the people we choose. They happen to be your trustees and your beneficiaries. If they're unavailable or unwilling, you don't like them anymore, you
fire them.
Still have the revocable powers, you by yourself, to be able to change your trust, to change your trustee, change your beneficiary. So you could change this document. You control it the same way that you control a puppet if you're doing a puppet show. I'm mixing analogies now. But people say, well, wait a minute. I don't want my trustee to be able to do whatever they want. I say, well, does your puppet dance by itself?
No.
No. You make the puppet dance.
That's right.
Right? You pull the strings. If you don't like your puppet, what do you do, Ben?
Get rid of it. Fire him.
Cut it.
That's right. Cut the strings off. See ya.
So that's a new one. What do you think about the toaster oven? Toaster and the oven analogy. Does it work?
Work.
What about the one person that says that they can move it with a dolly and put it up on the truck by themselves? Then what do you do?
Well, then I move on. It's just an analogy, Ben.
Yes.
It's not perfect.
I know.
Well, no, but they still need help, right? If they didn't have the dolly.
That's true.
Correct.
That's
right.
True.
The idea is, can I do something by myself or not? And if I control who I need to accomplish something, then I do, you know, control everything.
Right.
I have another analogy. This one is more personal to me. So I have a brother who's 4 years older than me. Okay. And whenever my grandfather would take us around and whatever, my brother would get to sit in the front seat.
Because he's 4 years older.
He's 4 years older.
That's right.
Yeah. And I would have to sit in the back seat, and I'd always be very upset about it.
Uh-huh. Because you're the younger one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you know what my grandfather said to me?
What did he say?
He said, the boss sits in the back.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right?
All right.
To make me feel bad. And I didn't buy it.
Of course.
It. Yeah.
No,
but
you didn't buy it. Of course.
So, you know, if you're some big shot like Ben, you know, at the radio station, you have someone driving you around, right?
Don't
there?
You know who I am?
Yeah. So you have someone driving you around.
Sit in the back.
Who's the boss? You're the boss.
Yeah,
you tell them where to drive.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't drive where you want to drive, you get a new driver.
Yep.
Right. How many drivers have you been through now, Ben?
Probably 15, at least.
So it's all different ways of explaining the same thing, but there's, you know, everyone just assumes irrevocable means irrevocable. And legally, it means something different than the way we use it day to day. There you go.
It's a shame they didn't come up with a different term. You talk about Medicaid, Medicare. You wish it was a different term.
Yes.
Same thing, revocable, irrevocable. Because it just, in a different context or a different explanation, people would say, oh, yeah, I know what that means, and I know what that means. Some people get confused.
We have the same thing with the powers of attorney, where there's a power to gift. And that word gift, it's a four-letter word.
Yes, it is.
It is a four-letter word.
Yes.
And people think, Kim, gift means someone can take all my money. And yeah, no. I guess gift means someone can take all your money, but gift also means someone can put more money in my trust to preserve my assets. And I just wish that, you know, New York used a different word than gift when they came up with the power of attorney, so it'd be a little easier for people to understand. What do you think, Kim?
Well, absolutely, because, you know, the again, you know, one of the my push buttons is, you know, like I said, plan, and the ability to be able to create the plan that you want is super important. And we don't always, unfortunately, get to do that, right? We're looking at an individual and trying to figure out the least intrusive plan, but it still may not be the ultimate
exactly.
And that they wanted, because our options are limited sometimes. So
we do have a couple minutes here, Kim, and I know that it is, July 9th today?
It is the 9th.
July
correct.
9th.
Yep.
And I know that January 1st is a mere 5.5 months away. January 1st is a pretty important date right now, right, Kim?
It is. It's when lots of things change.
So, well, why don't we say real briefly what's going to change, and then I think we'll have a minute or two for you to tell the world here whether you think they will change on that date. So what's supposed to change on that date?
Well, we're fairly certain that the look back will be put into effect that we've been talking about since, you know, 2020. The ability to qualify medically is going to change, right? So when we do Medicaid, there's two parts. There's the financial piece, but then there's also the medical piece of qualifying. And currently, it's easier to qualify than it would become, you know, maybe October, but we're thinking more likely January, in that you're going to need to prove that you require assistance with more of those activities of daily living that we talk about, you know, things like bathing, dressing, toileting, transferring, you know, grooming, those kinds of things. And you're going to have to show that you need hands-on assistance with those in order to qualify. Right now, you only need assistance with two. It's going to be changing to needing assistance with three. And three is hard because generally, you know, bathing and dressing is pretty easy. right? Those are our two top activities of daily living that folks need. Now, a lot of times when I'm working with people, they're like, yeah, but my mom can't make her own meals. She needs reminders to take medication. She can't get to the doctor. You know, unfortunately, those don't qualify as activities of daily living. Those are something that we call instrumental activities of daily living. They're the standby. You know, they go along with the activities of daily living, but they're not looked at as one of the qualifying factors medically. So really, again, you know, my planning button goes, particularly if you're thinking or you're in that spot, but you're kind of holding off, you know, now's really the time to do it. We've our assessment process has already changed. That changed the middle of May. And so, you know, gradually these other things will be coming into play, and it's just going to be more challenging and more difficult. And already it's not something that can happen overnight. You know, you and I are working with a family member whose loved one is in the nursing home. They're going to be discharged, you know, in a few weeks. And we're looking for ways to get them home because Medicaid's going to take, you know, 60, 90 days, right, before there's actually care in the home provided through Medicaid.
Right.
So it's not something that happens overnight. And we want to make sure that we have the ability to do the proper planning so that an individual doesn't have to stay in the nursing home, and they can come home, but they have the proper amount of care that they need in order to be able to remain at home.
So,
and not
harder to qualify financially, harder to qualify needs wise. January 1st, it's sooner than you think. So I know we're going to be out of time here in a minute. But if it's something that's worth talking about, please come into the office. Please call our office. If your loved one already has the need, it's not going to get better for the most part. I mean, I hope it does. But make a plan. Be proactive. Have a good weekend, Kim.
Thanks. Have a great weekend, guys.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.